Cyber 24 is presented by our friends at Valcom. Valcom is a Utah-based IT solutions and services provider with a drive for getting IT right. From ironclad security to computing and beyond, Valcom's 35-plus years means they have the experience and the expertise to help your business from desktop to the data center. Check them out at vlcm.com. And welcome to the Cyber 24 podcast, the weekly pod dedicated to helping business and governmental leaders better understand the often intimidating topic of cybersecurity so you can make better decisions for your organization. My name is Marty Carpenter of 24/9. I work in strategic communication, public affairs, and government relations. And today's guest expert is Perry Carpenter, no relation. Perry is the chief strategy officer of Know Before. It's the world's most popular security awareness and simulated phishing platform. He's also the podcast host on a show called Eighth Layer Insights. If you want to check that out, enjoy our conversation with Perry Carpenter. All right, our guest today is Perry Carpenter. He is the chief strategy officer of a company called Know Before. That's K-N-O-W B, the letter B, and the number four. And as far as we can tell from our conversation beforehand, no relation between Perry Carpenter and Marty Carpenter. But I feel like we're fast becoming friends, if not family members, Perry. So thanks for taking some time to be with us today on Cyber 24.
Absolutely. You are invited to the next reunion.
All right. Hey, if it's in Arkansas and there's some barbecue, I will definitely be there for sure. All right. Tell our audience a little bit about Know Before. What you guys do, how big you are, how you came to be involved in the space and all that.
Sure. So Know Before is, if you're standing back and trying to think about pinpointing what we actually do, the best categorization would be security awareness and training. So it's getting the right information in front of your employees at the right time to help them make the right decisions to ultimately reduce risk within your organization. When the company started, it was just over 10 years ago, and the state of this industry was horrible. The state of security awareness was really, really boring content, didn't really engage learners, and it was based around compliance. And so the best you really got was some bad PowerPoints and some people being herded into a break room once a year, kind of spoken at, not spoken to, not about relationship, but about being able to check a box for compliance. We came in really to kind of address all of the fundamental issues with that. So really content forward to the point where we have content now that is the equivalent of network quality TV dramas or comedies, in addition to all the micro content that people need to be successful. And we've won awards around the world for that. We have over 50,000 customers, which means we have billions and billions of data points on how people actually behave. And as I mentioned, just with that word behavior, we focus on shaping behavior, not just filling people's heads with information. And so simulated phishing is a part of that that's really well known in the industry, but we're evolving that to encompass really any security behavior that you can think of. And at the second half of this year, as we speak in 2022, we have a lot of revolutionary tools that are going to be coming towards the end of this year, based on some acquisitions and some other roadmap items that we've had.
So I want to talk about the behavior and security culture, but sure. First I want to go back to something you just mentioned, the type of network level programming that you have to do essentially. Like if I understand right, I'm kind of picturing training videos that aren't boring.
Right.
Am I on the right path there? And how did you stumble into that? Because that in and of itself seems like an industry that if you figured out how to bake that cake, you could do pretty well just on that enterprise alone.
Well, we really did. So if you go back about six-ish, maybe 7 years now, I was an analyst at Gartner. And I was covering the security awareness space. And so I was working with all the, you know, not only Know Before, but Know Before's competitors saying, here's what needs to be done in order to address a lot of this. And content fatigue, the fact that people are seeing the same thing year over year, the fact that it was really boring, the fact that it was compliance-based, was something that plagued the industry. And a lot of people were trying to solve this. So it's not just Know Before that was trying to do this the right way. There were a lot of really, really smart people around the world trying to say, how do we connect with people better? And so Know Before really jumped on the bandwagon. One of the things that I said is the reason that people would move from one vendor to another was that they felt like the content got stale. That if they saw the same thing more than once, the employee would say, why are you showing me this again? Are you questioning my intelligence? Or why are you showing this? It doesn't feel like it's relevant to me in some way. And so what I was telling everybody at that time was, you need to really take a Netflix approach to training. You have to have as many varieties of training and as much content as a network would, and not just a network, but a streaming platform, so you can appeal to lots of different learner profiles or the types of people that would say, oh, I prefer to see that as a comedy. I prefer to see that as a drama. I prefer to see that as just plain vanilla stuff. You need to be able to hit all of those so that you get the buy-in in the relationship with the person on the other side of the screen so that they're going to give you your time. And then you hit on a critical piece, which is make it not boring. So there's a couple ways to do that. First thing is to hit somebody at a relevant time of their life where they can connect the need. So you can even give what could be considered boring content, but if it feels relevant, if my toilet is backed up, I don't care if the person on the other end of the YouTube video is engaging or not. I care about whether they're actually helping me deal with my problem. Mm-hmm. And so there's a really interesting permission that you get at a relevant time to, you know, all the other formats pieces kind of strip away. So number one, if you can engage somebody at the point of behavior, they feel that relevance, and then you have a lot of permissiveness at that point. But if you could also, either at the point of behavior or teeing up to that, or with just general information, engage people and make something funny or make something highly emotional or stimulate them visually or auditorially, then you get a lot of additional buy-in because people are like, oh, that's not just information that the organization believes I need to have. It's actually interesting, or it touches me in a unique way. And mm-hmm. so we really, really focused on that. We won awards at the Cannes Corporate Media Film Festivals and the Nix Awards and tons of other awards around the world for a couple series that we have. The flagship one that we have is called The Inside Man, and it just finished season 4 and is a, you know, kind of a drama with some comedy elements in it, and very, very highly produced across multiple countries with real actors, not just people that are trying to stand in and hope for the best type of thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. My professional background over the last decade plus is state politics, and I was the governor's spokesman for a couple of years, and I've run 3 gubernatorial campaigns. And I would say that 90% of what I know about government going into those jobs, I learned from Aaron Sorkin and watching The West Wing. So nice. I'm a big believer that, yeah, if you got something that captures your attention, you can actually, you can learn from it, that kind of information can really sink in. So I didn't want to take us too far off topic, but I find that really interesting that you'd find that as a way to offer real value to clients in an ongoing way and make it a more effective training. That's really interesting. You had mentioned this idea of security culture and shaping behavior. What do you mean when you talk about security culture in general, or baking security into an organization's culture?
So I'll back it up a little bit and ask and answer a couple of fundamental questions. The first one is, when you think about the premise of quote unquote security awareness, I think we've as an industry, and by industry I mean security in general, or maybe even IT in general, we've kind of created a false sense of what we're actually looking for. We use that phrase security awareness, but we're not really looking for awareness. We're looking for a behavior to come out of that. And so the phrase security awareness has a lot of false assumptions in it. It makes the assumption that if I give people the right information, they will naturally believe the right things and do the right things as a result. And anybody that's a parent or a teacher knows that that's not the case. I can't just give somebody information and expect them to act on it in a relevant way. What I say is we have a fundamental thing that we're trying to deal with, which is what I call the knowledge intention behavior gap. So there's a gap between knowledge and a gap between knowledge and intending to act on that knowledge. So I can know something, but I may not intend to act on it. And then there's a gap between intention and action. I can intend to act on something, but I may not follow through with that. And any of us that have ever done New Year's resolutions know that that's the case. We have all the right information. We know the health benefits of doing things, or the financial benefits of doing something, or the relational benefits of doing something. And we even write lists about it. We tell people that we're going to change. And in the moment, we just don't follow through with that. So we have to solve for that gap between knowledge and intention. We have to solve for the gap between intention and action. And so out of that realization comes three realities of security awareness. Just because I know doesn't mean that I, or just because I'm aware doesn't mean that I care. If we ever try to work against human nature, we will fail. And then what an employee does is way more important than what they know. And I would say what you and I do is way more important than what you and I know, because that knowledge piece can recede and the behavior actually determines the reality that we live in. And so we have to go in with that kind of understanding as security professionals, because if our ultimate goal is to reduce risk, then knowledge may be a part of that, but it may also be that I look at my infrastructure differently. I look at my policies differently. I look at some of the other layers of security a little bit differently. And I say, oh, it doesn't actually matter if Bob in accounting knows and understands X, because I can supplement that by a process, or I can add additional technology here, or I can stack all the behavior patterns to where, regardless of what Bob knows, the only way that he can achieve something is to behave in a certain way, and we can facilitate that behavior to make the secure behavior the easiest behavior to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so that's the shaping piece that I'm talking about.
Yeah. You can kind of tailor it then within an organization, right, to say, we're strong here. This employee is maybe not quite as strong, and we can tailor the process for them.
Exactly.
So it's culture to a certain extent. I think when a lot of people think of the term culture, it's, hey, we've kind of bought into this, and this is our collective way of thinking. And it sounds like it's that to an extent, but it's also, I don't know if there's a better term, but this probably isn't the right way to say it, but like idiot proofing it in some cases, where you say like, this person is going to behave the right way if we set it up so that they have to go through the maze this way. But if you've got someone, you don't have to put everyone through all of those hurdles to do that if they're going about it the right way anyway. Is that correct?
It is part of it. So when I talk about culture, it's kind of the evolution of where behaviors can go, right? Because mm-hmm. when you have a collective group of people exhibiting the same behaviors, what you start to get is what we would call cultural norms. If you and I share the same language, we have a lot of the same educational background, we have a lot of the same friends group and other associated worldviews and behaviors, then we'll naturally reinforce all those things to anybody else that comes into, we'll just call it the collective at that mm-hmm. point.
Yeah.
And so when you think about culture, or when you think about society, we're always kind of moving into this shared middle, which is where all gravitational force pushes, which is this is the established norm. And then anybody that exists outside of that is either existing outside in a positive way, and we kind of idolize those people and we put them on a platform. We say, this is what everybody could aspire to if they want to, or if they deviate from that central kind of gravitational field, they exist on the negative side. And mm-hmm. those people are demonized or ostracized. They're trying to, what you do is you start to say that person is not acting in the interest of the rest of the group. And so we need to correct that behavior, or we need to jettison that behavior in some mm-hmm. way. And yeah. so when I talk about culture, there is that that behavior piece, but there's the part that people catch just based on seeing it. And so we break down, based on a lot of cognitive science research and social science research, we break down culture into seven different dimensions: attitudes, behaviors, cognition, communication, compliance, norms, and responsibilities. And the cool thing is as an organization, you don't have to really focus on all of those in order to improve your security culture. You could pick a couple. You could say, I'm going to focus on behaviors, and I've got a number of ways that I can measure that. And I'm going to start to really build the behavior piece. And if you do that right, you may actually start to change the norms of your organization. So by focusing on one, I've actually affected the gravitational force of another. Or if I focus on cognition, I may actually also impact the attitudes, because now people understand why we're asking them to do certain things. And if I'm focusing on cognition and that changes attitudes, that may naturally start to change some of the behaviors as well. And so there's this really interesting kind of dance that all of these areas that we could focus on do with each other. And that's what we're starting to get at when we talk about culture. It's knowledge, but that knowledge gets codified in beliefs that gets really kind of pushed down into value systems that can be expressed through behaviors. And then all of those come out through the attitudes, behaviors, cognition, communication, compliance, norms, and responsibility. Yeah.
So it's really based on like what you consistently do, right? Whether you consistently don't care about culture, it will sort of become whatever it becomes. But either way, whether you're deliberate or not deliberate about it, what you do consistently averages out to become what the culture is. So if you have a posture of we're determined to make security a priority, that over time that becomes what you do consistently and that becomes the culture.
Right. What you do and what you espouse or communicate a lot, because sometimes people can't see or catch the doing piece from certain people within the organization if they're removed. And so you saw a lot of work like that done over the past few decades, not really around security, but around corporate culture, which is where all these posters and slogans and other bits of corporate
treats
start to come in. All of that stuff starts to come in because there is a culture that they're trying to reinforce in certain ways. And there's varying degrees of success with all of that. But I think you are hinting at something. If there's a disconnect between the messaging and the behavioral reality, people clue in on that in a second.
Yeah. And it's ultimately why it's so difficult to change culture, because you have a consistent pattern that's gone over time, and trying to change that initially, you don't have enough consistency to sort of overcome the previous set of consistencies. And so until you kind of build up enough of a streak, momentum a little bit, it's hard to sort of change what that culture is.
Yeah, there's a great, and I don't remember who the first one to say it was, but there's a great kind of distillation of what culture really is. And this person said, culture is the way things are done around here. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it in that way, it really is. It's culture, I think, is something that we can overthink. And I'm all for thinking about things in a very philosophical way and trying to break it down and be scientific with it. But if you think about it, culture is something that we have all, if we're in the corporate world, we've all seen different iterations of culture a lot, because there was a culture that we experienced in high school and grade school, which we really started to understand the effect of peer groups then. There's a culture that we start to understand as we live in different parts of our organization. The marketing team has a little bit of a different culture than the IT team, and there's a different language that comes with that. So we need to be very aware of all those things. And I keep coming back to this word gravity, the gravity that each of those have, because each of those pockets of culture has different artifacts and rituals and language structures and social structures that start to define that. And so if we're trying to think about that at a very, very high organizational level, we at least have to be aware of those things so that we can figure out how to work with those in certain areas, or potentially hope to override some of those where they work against the broader culture that we're trying to push down.
The demand has never been greater for business owners and IT professionals to invest in intelligent security camera systems. At the intersection of physical security and cybersecurity, an increasing number of organizations struggle to take a proactive approach to surveillance. Verkada's all-in-one physical security platform makes this decision easy with features like plug-and-play installation, centralized management, secure remote access to cameras, and smart features and alerts. Smarter security starts with Verkada. Learn more at vlcmtech.com/Verkada. That's vlcmtech.com/VERKADA. If you're looking for protection from uncontrolled access, Salto can deliver the perfect solution. tailored to your exact requirements to provide you with all the security, convenience, and control you need. With Salto, you install access control in a wire-free environment, so there's no need to hardwire the building. Because Salto works on a virtual network, you can enroll or replace a lost key within seconds, making reprogramming and rekeying a problem of the past. See how Salto can make your access control and building security simpler and safer at vlcmtech.com/salto. That's vlcmtech.com/S-A-L-T-O. So how can an organization quickly foster buy-in and kind of deal with, like, anytime you're changing culture, there's a culture shock, right? When you go from high school to college, your life changes and there's a culture shock and you adapt to it and adjust to the new norms. And you do that within, you know, when you go take a new job, and companies can do that to try to change their culture. So how can an organization best, I would maybe say most quickly, get buy-in and foster a security culture? Does it something that has to start at the board level? Does it have to start more grassroots? What's your take on that?
So if somebody is going to intentionally work on their culture, I think that that has to start at the board level. If you're building a security culture management program, I think you owe it to yourself to try to start at the board level and sell that in, so that you get the buy-in to potentially be disruptive if you need to be. If you're not doing that, if you're just trying to make point gains, then you could start at the middle of the organization or at the bottom of the organization by trying to say, maybe we need to build a security champions program. We're going to deal with more in node type of people that have social influence in the organization. We're going to rope them in. We're going to make them security ambassadors so that they can start to evangelize all of that. But they're never going to have the impact that they could if you are also working at the board level, the executive level, and the management level. And so I do think you kind of have to work through all of those, because, again, if you're doing a lot of great stuff at the security advocate level or the liaison level, there's a ton of different names for these kind of in node. I call them culture carriers, because I think that kind of distills the purpose of those security champion programs down to one thing. But if you're working at a culture carrier type of level, and then all of a sudden somebody at the executive level says, why are you tapping these people's time? We need to scrap that program. Then all of that gain that you just made there could go away within a quarter. Because culture likes to drift. It likes to kind of move back towards the thing that it's going to be if nobody pays attention to it. And so I really do think you have to have that executive buy-in. And the way to have that, and also the way to get the buy-in at the individual level, is to go back to a principle that's been evangelized by Simon Sinek, which is a guy that lots of us have heard the name of before, which is that start with why. So if I'm going to sell this to the board, the why behind that is we need to do this to reduce risk to the organization, because the entire reason that security exists is to reduce risk, bring that down to a tolerable level so that the business can do what the business needs to do. So I need to sell down or sell the reason that we need to do security culture management. At the organizational level, at the lower level within each person, I may need to talk about that why we're doing it, but I also need to also evangelize why this is important to the individual that needs to bring this on. You know, how does this change of culture, change of attitude, change of behavior actually make their lives better, make their lives more rich in some way? And so I need to find the touch points there of, oh, if you do this here, we're also going to give you the information that you need to keep your family more protected. We're going to help you make more sound financial decisions in the long term, because you're not going to be taking risks the same way with your online persona. So you can start to talk about the why through a prism. The why at the board level is the reduction of risk. You may also talk about the personal things, the why to the people that you're needing to bring on board. A little bit lower level are going to be very much more personal.
It's interesting, because throughout our entire conversation, what's become clear is that your company is as much a behavior analysis type company as it is, you know, it's as much understanding human behavior as it is understanding IT security, and marrying those two is sort of your secret sauce.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, I think that there's an ecosystem of companies out there doing this. So I don't want to say that Noble4 is the only company that's thinking through this lens. We're definitely the largest, and I think we have the most sophisticated infrastructure and technology and all of that. But there are, you know, a number of great folks that are thinking about how we marry IT security and behavior science, or IT security and social science, so that we can start to really deal with the fact that humans have been a neglected layer of the security stack for a long time. And the Verizon DBIR and a lot of the data breaches that we see over and over and over really reflect that. If we put a lot of our faith in a lot of the crunchy technologies that are out there. And we've gotten really, really good at technology-based security, but the effect of that is that we've made it so hard to hack into a system that we've pushed the attacker over to Bob in accounting. Instead of trying to hack through the firewall or deal with anything else, it's much easier just to try to trick somebody into giving away everything than it is to use a technology-based attack. And so we've unintentionally made the humans the primary attack target. And therefore, we need to really do everything that we can to bolster the human side of things and no longer neglect this human side of security.
Yeah, you're right. Because usually when we talk about the people involved in the cybersecurity puzzle, it's always just to say, well, they're the weakest link in the chain. And then you kind of move on to like, well, and here's how we get around that. And so this is sort of addressing them as a key element, not just in, hey, they need to know these things. You know, going back to what you said earlier, it's not just that they know it, it's that that becomes part of their behavior. I think that's a really interesting way to approach it.
Yeah. And humans, you know, the people in our companies, they don't want to be thought of as the weakest link. There's, when you look at everything human, you see that there's a ton of dichotomies within humanity itself. Is we are both very strong and very weak at the same time. We are very creative and very destructive at the same time. You know, just about anything that you can think of that is a virtue of humanity also has a weakness associated with it. But I think one of the things that we need to do as a security industry is not just assume all the negatives about humans, because we have been doing that and it's not been doing us a lot of good. We have more data breaches now than we did years ago, despite the fact that everybody's spending more and more on technology every year. So instead, we need to very squarely look at the humans that we have, build both technologies and processes that lean into the way that human nature actually works, and move to, into reinforce all the strengths that the humans within our companies actually can bring to bear, which is things like reporting, things like feeling in their gut that something is off and going and having good conversations. And I'm not saying that what we do is that we don't spend on firewalls or secure email gateways and we throw all that money at humans. I'm just saying we need to stop neglecting the human side, and we need to put intentional focus on it, because what we have seen is that what we're currently doing doesn't work. So one of the things that we could definitely touch on is maybe some of the roots of the behavior science that are there. When we get into behavior science, there's a few different models that get used. One, there's a guy known as the father of behavior design called BJ Fogg. And he has a very popular behavior design model called the Fogg behavior model. And it basically purports that behavior happens. Anytime somebody does an action, this behavior happens whenever three elements come together. Motivation, the ability to do the behavior, and a prompt. And so no behavior happens if one of those pieces is out of whack. I can have all the right motivation and the behavior can be easy enough to do, but if I don't have an internal or an external prompt pushing me into doing it, I'm not going to do the behavior. Or I may be prompted to do a behavior. You could ask me, or I could even have an internal desire to do something, and I could really, really want to do it, but if it's too hard, I can never accomplish it. And so we're always having to pivot around those. Is the prompt there? Is it visible? Does the person have the right amount of ability? Is the behavior easy enough to do? And is the motivation there in the right amount? And so when we think about behavior design, that's what I mean by leaning into to human nature, because what we have done over decades is kind of set humans up to not be part of the equation. And so as we started to, if you think about something like password management, we as an industry have said, you need to have really good, long, strong, unique passwords that aren't shared, that aren't based on an algorithm where you're not, you know, doing all this, you know, what we would say stupid stuff. And then we also expect them to manage that across, you know, 200 different accounts. I don't care who you are as a human, you can't remember 200 strong, unique, non-shared, non-algorithmically based or pattern-based passwords across that many accounts. So if we're going to lean into human nature, that's where things like password managers come in. And I love that example because it's not self-serving at all to me. I don't sell a password manager at KnowBe4, but it's a really good way of bowing to human nature and saying, you know what, there's a piece of technology that can come along that can augment the human problem that's associated with this. And you can rely on a human to remember 5 to 10 really good, strong, unique passwords. And you can say, I don't want to take the inherent risk that's in a password manager of a, you know, maybe a keys to the kingdom problem across 200 accounts. But let's say there are 5 to 10 accounts where I just don't trust the password manager if that were compromised. Well, I can trust Bob in accounting to remember 5 or 10 passwords, and we'll make a policy and we'll build some reinforcement to where that password manager will not manage those accounts that I deem too risky. But outside of that, we can strengthen everything else to, you know, to a really good degree, No human would ever be able to do on their own. So I think that understanding, because again, if we're looking at the behavior management model, I can prompt all day long. You will not, you know, exhibit bad password hygiene. I could have somebody that has all the right motivation, but they're just not ever going to have the ability to do that. And I can prompt somebody, and they may have the right ability to do something, but if they're not motivated at the time of behavior, they're not going to do it. So we're always trying to solve for those. And there's tons of behavior research, even outside of FOG, that helps to accomplish those things.
That's really interesting stuff. I really appreciate you taking some time with us today, Perry, to help us know a little bit more about KnowBe4 and your approach. I think it's really fascinating.
Thank you.
Everything from actually engaging content that people might want to consume to learn how to do the things that they need to do and to understanding their behaviors and so on. Really interesting stuff. So thanks so much for taking some time with us today and sharing this with our audience.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That'll do it for this episode. I want to thank our sponsors at Valcom. At Valcom, you get much more than a dedicated IT retailer. They become an extension of your IT team. Whether you're a startup or an enterprise, Valcom has the technical sales and engineering expertise to make your business more effective and more productive. Check them out at vlcm.com. That's vlcm.com. Special thanks as well to our supporting partners, the Utah Division of Technology Services, the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute, the Utah Attorney General's Office, the Utah Department of Public Safety, and our friends at Secuvant. A reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at cyber24_, or you can hit us up on Facebook as well. We want to hear from you in either place to let us know what you think, or if you have a topic you'd like to hear us discuss on a future episode. You can also rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. We love those 5-star ratings. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week and stay safe online.